This is a Hot Pie original.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the DMP CD Sports Podcast presented by Oddshark. I'm Chad Fisher alongside my co-host, Tony Farmer. Tony, how you doing, brother?
Dude, I'm doing awesome today because we're going to talk a little fantasy football.
Yeah.
Our first time that we're really going deep with fantasy football on a show.
Yeah, everyone loves fantasy football, man. Besides me, I guess. I'm not like a huge fantasy, but I'm really looking forward to this interview because I want to learn a little bit about it. People are always asking me to join leagues and stuff like that, so it'd be good to get some information.
Yeah, we got one of the best in the business on the show today.
Yeah, yeah. So. Dave Richard from CBS Sports. Awesome guy. Very, very popular online. Well-known guy and has a lot of great information that is definitely going to help people in their fantasy leagues, I think.
No doubt about it, man. Before we get to that, though, let's talk a little bit about one of our favorite sponsors.
Of course.
Oddshark.
Yeah.
They're your source for the latest odds and leading authorities, expert editorial content, the hottest sports news, detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? Oddshark has that too. And the best of all, folks, it's absolutely free. You're crazy not to check them out. They have in-depth expert analysis, odds, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks. They've got decades of stats in their databases. Their insiders give you takes so hot that they sizzle. They're your one-stop shop for all your odds and info on sports and pop culture events.
Yeah, so if you want to get a better understanding of the odds and the math behind the numbers, how the line is set, why the lines move during the week, Oddshark will give you all the tools you need. They're a proven industry powerhouse. Oddshark has info from around the globe, giving you the chance to access the best sports odds on the planet. Whether you want to check out tonight's football odds, this week's hockey or basketball trends, or anything in between, head on over to Oddshark and start thinking like a shark today. Go-to resource, man. We love those guys. And we're going to get into our betting segment presented by Oddshark. And we got this idea from a tweet that Oddshark sent out last week. And they had a good line on 2022 NFL MVP long shots. And I thought that was very interesting because there is a lot of long shots, a lot of interesting long shots I think you can get in on. And so I just want to go through a couple of them. They got Jameis Winston at plus 5,000, Sam Darnold at the same number, Ben Roethlisberger at plus 6,600. Justin Fields at plus 6,600, which is interesting for a rookie to have the same number as Ben Roethlisberger, who had a good season last year up until about week 12.
Sure.
Was really setting the league on fire there for a little bit. Kirk Cousins. I would stay away from that dude, but that's just me personally. He's at 6,600 as well. Taysom Hill, Trevor Lawrence, Trey Lance, all at 6,600. Daniel Jones, Mac Jones, Big Mac Jones up at 8,000. Wow. Yeah.
Zach Wilson, 800, and Andy Dalton, 15,000.
Wow.
That's 150-1.
You gotta have some balls to put some money on Andy Dalton.
For sure, man. And a little bit later on, like we said, we're gonna have Dave Richard on the show, and I want to ask him his thoughts on, you know, the Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston breakdown, because that's interesting to have two guys from the same team on this list, both playing quarterbacks. That doesn't happen very often.
At all. And Jameis Winston, you know, can throw touchdowns. He's got an arm, but his accuracy has been an issue. And that's not usually something that you can fix as an NFL quarterback. You either are or you aren't. It's not something that you can get better at, really. So it'll be interesting. But because he does have a lot of potential. If he does have a breakout year, then if he wins the MVP, then obviously Sean Payton is going to be coach of the year. You know, so that's something else you might want to look at. But
yeah,
who knows, man. Jameis, I like the guy. I hope he puts it together, but we'll see.
If Taysom Hill is announced the starter, which I don't think he will be, but if he is announced the starter, I kind of like him at 66-1 just because he can do so much. And the MVP voters seem to like those guys who are running quarterbacks who can get you, you know, 8 or 9 rushing touchdowns on top of a prolific throwing season. And so it's a big if he's announced starter, I think that's the guy that I go with there. And I also like, this is a little bit of a homer pick because I'm a 49er guy, but I like Trey Lance at 66-1 too. I think that, again, if he's announced starter, big if, I wouldn't do it if he's not. But if he's announced a starter, really for the same reason I just mentioned for Taysom Hill, because he's a dual threat guy and you're in that Kyle Shanahan offense, which, you know, you're going to get a lot of opportunities to shine. I like him a lot there too.
Yeah, I would stay away. I'd stay away from Kirk Cousins, but one that I like, even though I'm a Browns fan, is Ben Roethlisberger. You know, he's gonna have a chip on his shoulder coming in this year. You could foresee him actually having like a really good year. If he would have kept up the numbers he had put up for the first 11 weeks of the season last year, and they had stayed, you know, only lost a game or two, maybe they were 14-2 or something like that. He might have been in talks for MVP candidate, you know, and I think he was for at least half the season last year. So I think that's like a decent pick. But yeah, I'm with you. I would say I would stay away from Big Mac Jones. I don't know how many Big Macs that. I mean, I'm sure Bill Belichick's trying to get him on a little diet, man, but I don't know.
Yeah, rookie of the year might be a little more realistic than league MVP for Mac.
I'm not putting money down on somebody that looks like they spent an entire summer in a basement gaming and pounding Mountain Dews. You know what I'm saying? he looks like one of them dudes that have Kool-Aid on the side of his mouth and shit, and he come out to play. Like, dude, what are you doing? You fat little fucking hillbilly. Go in and wash your mouth. And they're trying to get Kool-Aid juice on their shoulders and shit.
A never-ending supply of Mac Jones jokes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dog. I love this. Is just the beginning. The season hasn't started yet. You know what I'm saying? Oh, wait. I got so much more for this dude. Oh, yeah. Big Mac Jones. Yeah.
Good stuff.
We're going to have him on someday, man. He's not going to.
No, he's never coming on this show. I guarantee you that. We reach out to his agent. He's going to be like, absolutely not.
Hell no. I heard about that shit. Oh, the Kool-Aid mouth. Okay, motherfucker. Kool-Aid mouth this ass because he ain't coming on your show. That right now.
But on a serious note, looking at these MVPs, I personally always like to stay away from the favorites, right? That's the tempting move to take, like a Pat Mahomes at 3-1 or at 4-1, but those guys can get hurt. You know, if you go out for a long shot pick and you throw some pizza money on a 66-1 and they get hurt or they don't shine like you think they might, that doesn't hurt so much. But when you drop $300-$500 on a favorite to win MVP and that doesn't come through because of an injury otherwise, that stings. And so I would definitely, in my opinion, avoid those and look at some of these long shots that Oddshark has provided.
Yeah, I like that Taysom Hill, like you said. I think that's a decent pick as well, man.
Worth checking out. I mean, obviously the quarterbacks are where you're going to start.
It's
typically a quarterback, so you got to start there. And those are some of our favorites. So, thanks for checking out our betting segment. And now we can move on to Dave Richard, which we're really excited about.
Yeah.
Our next guest is a senior fantasy writer for CBSSports.com with a focus, of course, on NFL football. He was the first ever fantasy writer for NFL.com before transitioning to CBS Sports in 2006. His tireless analysis of film and numbers has been helping people draft, set their lineups, and dominate their fantasy leagues for two decades. Welcome to the show, Dave Richard. Dave, how are you, man?
Do you know how much money I've had to spend to make everything that you just said true? How many bribes I've had to give? And, you know, how many steak dinners I've had to buy for fancy executives? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I didn't do that. But
slip them a couple hundreds,
man. I'm a lucky guy, man. I work hard every day to try and keep this gig. So.
Hey, man, you are
looking good
guy.
At it, brother.
Glad to be on with you guys. And thank you. It takes a lot of hard work. A lot of people are like, oh man, fantasy football writer sounds like the dream job. All you got to do is just, you know, watch a lot of football and say whatever you want. Well, you got to be able to back up everything that you say.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of different ways you can back up your analysis when it comes to sports. And when it comes to fantasy, usually the best way to do it is with numbers, data, things really, people really like those types of things. But I like to watch film and I really like to watch the players play and get an idea of like what the coaches might be trying to do with them. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And I always like to look at the schedule. So I'm grading defenses. I just got done with this huge project where I graded like five different elements of every defense in the NFL.
Wow.
Just so I could plunk it into the schedule and tell people which players have a favorable schedule this year, or I believe we'll have a favorable schedule this year, versus which players are going to have a nightmare schedule and you might want to think twice about drafting them. It's a whole big project. I'm glad it's done and over with. But that's the type of labor that I'm putting in during the off season to help people win their leagues.
Wow. That's really fascinating because that is so important, because a lot of times that's something that people look over, I think, is if you're going after a big time wide receiver and if he's going up against three of the top five cornerbacks in the first half of the season, that's obviously going to affect his trajectory and the numbers he's going to put up.
I mean, it depends on the receiver.
Yeah,
I mean,
obviously.
Talking about somebody like, for example, I've got Kansas City. I do grades for over the balance of the season and also the first 4 weeks. Kansas City has the second toughest projected strength of schedule for wide receivers. Damn, that's a mouthful. I got to work on. It's basically the second toughest early season schedule. Does that mean that you shouldn't draft Tyreek Hill? Hell no.
Yeah, of course not.
Tyreek Hill and you're going to love it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the type of receiver who's just matchup proof because he's so fast and his quarterback is so good. But maybe for a receiver like Kenny Golladay, for example, who's changing teams, changing offenses, different quarterback, and he's got the third toughest schedule to begin the season. Well, maybe you think twice about drafting him, and maybe you don't view him as the type of stud receiver that you might have at this time last year.
Take him down a couple positions on the draft board, potentially.
Yeah.
In that example, right?
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, I'm not even sure if he's a top 24 receiver.
Oh, wow. So before we get into some numbers and everything like that and what you're looking at, you kind of alluded to it there with your answer. We want to talk about like your career trajectory. A lot of people would love the job that you have writing about fantasy football for CBS. We want to know, like, how did you get to where you are now? How did you work your way up the ladder?
And what advice would you have for a college student?
I mean, how much time do we have?
we got all day, brother.
Yeah, all day, brother.
So I went to college. I went to college with the idea that I was going to be the next great screenwriter.
Oh, wow.
I loved movies. I loved analyzing movies. I loved writing movies. I took a film class. You know, some kids get a summer job or they go to summer camp. I went to, like, take college credit film courses over the summer when I was a teenager. Wow. I go to Miami and I end up falling in love more with football than I do with motion pictures. And by the time I graduated, I didn't want anything to do with Hollywood. I wanted to go and work in sports or do something with sports. I ended up selling sports memorabilia out of my parents' basement when I was 21 years old. That wasn't really a glamorous job, but I got lucky and got my foot in the door with CBS Sports covering pro wrestling. This is in the heyday of pro wrestling.
Nice.
In the 2000s.
Nice.
I'm telling you, I applied for a different job and they saw that I was like writing for a wrestling site for free. And they were like, do you know a lot about wrestling? I'm like, hell yeah, I've been watching wrestling since I was 8 years old. They're like, all right, we've got a better job than the one that you applied for.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Why don't you go ahead and go for this one? So I got a better job than I applied for. I went from, you know, living out of my parents' house as a 22-year-old to living on my own in South Florida, back where I went to college, with this job that was giving me more money than I ever thought I'd have at 21 or 22 years. How old was I? I must have been, it was 2000, so I must have been 24. I don't know why I was saying 21 or 22. Came down to Florida within a week of my starting at Sportsline. At the time, it was called Sportsline, CBS Sports now. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew that I was big on fantasy football and loved football. I became one of the, like, the fantasy football guys in the office. You know, usually you'd say fantasy football nerds, but everybody is a sports fan and plays fantasy and in an office that deals with sports. So yep. I was just one of those guys. And when CBS won the rights to produce NFL.com, so the NFL wasn't sure at one point whether or not the internet was going to be a thing. So CBS paid for the right to produce the NFL's website. And I came along with it. They made me a producer for the NFL. I quit wrestling and went to the NFL. And they needed somebody to write about fantasy football. So in addition to all the other stuff that I did, I was ghostwriting for a bunch of analysts at the time. I started writing about fantasy football. And this was 2003. So it was still before fantasy really got big. And like 3 years later, CBS was like, you know what, man? We want you to do this for us, not for the NFL. So come over to our site and do it. And I've been doing this job in some form or fashion. It's grown exponentially since 2005.
Wow.
That's awesome.
So 16 years.
You're one of the OGs.
The NFL, something like that.
One of the OGs over here.
It's been a lot of fun, but it's hard work, man. It's tough to stay on top of things. And, you know, I feel great when I get a pick right and I feel terrible when I get a pick wrong. And you'd think I'd win every single one of my leagues, but I don't. And make playoffs in a lot of leagues, but I don't win them all. And it's fun, but it's hard work, man. Every job is hard work.
Yeah.
One of the questions I've always wanted to ask you is you're very generous with allowing people to email you and hit you up on Twitter with picks and stuff like that. What kind of a volume are we talking about? Say like a given week during the NFL season, how many people are you responding to in one way or another? Would you figure?
I would say if we include like going on the radio and doing podcasts, that's probably in the neighborhood of like 300 people individually.
Wow.
If we throw out that stuff, if we don't bother with radio and podcasts, are we talking strictly about just Twitter? On Sundays, I get to a lot of people on Twitter. Usually I can get to maybe 150 just right there on Twitter. People email me out of the blue. Occasionally people will call me out of the blue. That's always a little sketchy.
Ugh. Oh yeah.
But how'd you get my number, bro?
To as many people as I possibly can. I don't know if I want to give my number out. I've thought about it before.
Yeah.
Just as like a dare to like just drop my cell phone number on Twitter and see how many people start calling me up. But what I have done in the past, so this is a funny story. We used to have a Saturday night radio show. So I would try and get people to call into our radio show on Saturday night to ask their fantasy football questions. And one night I just tweeted the phone number and that's it. So I got like two or three DMs from people in the industry. They're like, "Hey man, are you sure you meant to send that phone number out to everybody?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, of course I did. I'm trying to get people to call and listen in and be a part of the show." And it worked. We get a full bank of phone calls every time we're on the radio. So it was just a way to get more people who may have said, "Oh man, there's a mistake and there's a phone number and what the hell? I'm not doing anything. I'll call this number that Dave just tweeted. Maybe Dave will be there." And I was there and I helped people out. But I'm down with that, man. I want to help people compete in their leagues. I know I can help them compete in their leagues. I don't know if I can always guarantee that they will win their leagues. I have no control over what happens between the sidelines every single game, but I'd like to think that I've got, a beat on what's going on and trying to help people out as best as I can. I put in the work for it, and that's how I can sleep well at night. If I wasn't working hard and I was ruining people's fantasy teams, then I'd be a fake and it would suck. And I probably wouldn't have this job after 16 years, but I put in the time and really happy to help people out. That's what it's all about for me.
Yeah. So there's a limit to your kindness, though. You don't want people popping out of your bushes and stuff like that, like scratching their neck, like, "Hey man, I need some more fantasy info." "Hey man, just give me some more fantasy info. I just need a little bit more, please."
I've had people knock on my front door.
Jesus.
They live in my neighborhood. "Oh, hey, my God, you're the CBS fantasy guy. We're neighbors. Yeah. Can you help me out with something?"
Check out this draft I got.
The craziest story of all. I've been spotted at Disney World. I've been spotted at airports. And I'm not like, "I'm too busy for you. I got to go." I'm always there.
But you got to, stuff
like,
to do, man.
Hang out as much as I can. And look, I've been on the other end of that where I see somebody, who said, "Oh my God, David Hasselhoff, you're here in the airport. Can I, sign my shoe?" But the craziest story is, I'm at work one day. I can't remember how many years ago it was, but I want to say it's like 4 or 5 years ago. And I've got the worst stomach pain and it starts going up into my chest and I'm thinking I'm having a heart attack. And So I hop in my car. I plan on driving home and making an appointment with my doctor. It's gotten so bad that I can barely drive. I go right to the emergency room. Mm. They book me in the emergency room. They put me right into one of those gowns that ties up in the back. They start running tests on me. Doctors and nurses running in and out. I've got stuff all over me. They're doing an EKG, whatever. Finally, there's like a moment of silence and a male nurse comes in, closes the blinds behind him, turns around to me and says, "Dave Richard, I'm such a huge fan. I listen to every single podcast." And I look at him and I go, "Get the F out of here." I'm, it's my worst moment. You? I might be dying. Yeah. And he's telling me about how he's a big fan of mine. I basically had to like eventually be really nice to him. Yeah. And, anytime he asks for fantasy help, I don't know, it's been a while since he's done it, but I was happy to help him, but not in my moment where I might be dying. I'm not going to help you with your fantasy.
That's where you draw the limit.
I have to draw a line somewhere.
You're like, "Hey, get the hell out of here and bring me some pudding back when you come." Or Jello, whatever, either or. I like them. Like them both.
Juice cups?
I need a juice cup back here, stat, brother.
Dave, I was wondering, man, you give a lot of advice and you're talking about the volume of how many people you give advice to. And of course, you're not going to be right every time. So have you ever had, I'm sure you have, can you tell us stories about people that have reached out and, "What the heck, you gave me the wrong pick." How often does that, which is so sad because you're donating your time. It should come with the expectation. You're not going to be right every single time and stuff happens. How often do you get that negativity?
I get that negativity every week, but it's gotten a lot better over the years, which is strange because we're living in an era where there's a lot of negativity on social media. You'd think that people would just come for my head as much as possible, blaming me for their fantasy losses. And there are people who do it, but it used to be, oh my God, we used to have like this feedback form in every single article on CBS Sports where people could email us with, "What are your thoughts? What do you like, dislike? Do you got a question here?" All you got to do is just type stuff in. And people would email the worst things to us. It was terrible. Mm. And that got shut down. And now there's message boards. We used to have those on the site. So like you'd read our whole article and we'd, put our hard work into these articles, and some, you know, slap nut is sitting there at the other side of his computer terminal going, this article sucks. You're a moron. And they'd spell you're wrong. And
Of course, they always do that. Yeah.
We're always.
Always. Crazy. Every time.
There's an apostrophe if it's you are. Just remember that.
That's hilarious.
You're going to be good to go.
We're telling grown men
this.
Otherwise,
it's, you know? I don't understand. But I'm a writer, I guess. It's a pet peeve. And my mom was a teacher. So
same.
She was thrilled into me. But now it's like occasionally some people will get on me because I rank low on like the fantasy pros accuracy site, which I don't even know what that means. And I don't actively participate in that at all. So I don't even know what that's all about. And then sometimes people say, oh, yeah, you said that Tyler Higbee was going to have a good year. Well, he sucks now. So you suck, too. And I don't know. I used to take some of it really hard, and sometimes I still do. Usually the players that I'm really passionate about and I really feel good about, when they strike out, that's when I'm the one who's low. And anybody could email me or text me or tweet me anything, and it won't even come close to how I feel about it. It really gets me down, man. Sure. It's crazy how that works. But for the most part, a lot of people, like if I get 10 negative tweets on a Sunday night, 5 of them are legitimately mean. 3 of them are, man, that really sucked, but hey, it happens.
Yeah.
And then the other two are just like stuff that's easy to blow off, where like the person on the other end doesn't even make sense. When he's trying to rant on me. I do know that my colleague Jamie Eisberg gets it a lot worse. Every week he has a start of the week, and when that pick is wrong, he gets a lot of flack for it. So, but he's, you know, he's a confident guy. He knows that he's going to be able to do good the very next week. And, you know, we have no control.
Yeah. You're making projections.
And,
you know?
And by the way, if we were to actually go out and say, hey, don't start Julio Jones this week, he's going to have 3 catches for 40 yards. Would you even listen? No, you wouldn't listen. I can answer that for you.
Right.
There's just some players that they're going to have a bad game. It happens. That's just the way it is. And then there's other players that you would never even consider starting. You know, no one wants to start Quintez Cephas from the Detroit Lions.
You dug deep
and
for that one.
And he has a big game. You know, my focus is always, I'm trying to come out on a side with players who are not obvious every week.
Okay.
Like Robbie Anderson was one of those guys. Every week you didn't know what to do with Robbie Anderson. And now in retrospect, the answer is you should have started him every week because he was pretty good most weeks. And now people are wondering, what do you do with Robbie Anderson? But I like to focus on those non-obvious guys. If I tell you to start Christian McCaffrey, you're going to laugh at me. And if I tell you to start some, you know, moron that no one's ever heard of, you're going to say, why would I start this moron that I've never heard of?
So, yeah. Catch 22.
Yeah. So when I'm in with those non-obvious guys, I like to come out bold. I like to have a rationalized take on them. And if I'm wrong and I hear about it, it's okay. Usually it doesn't affect me, but there's not as much as there used to be, which is a good thing.
Dave, do you find, you mentioned being in the leagues earlier, being in your own fantasy leagues, do you find that you're kind of at a little bit of a disadvantage because your opponents, they're inside your head because what you're saying is public? So like if you're trying to trade for someone, they already know how much you like them. Does that put you at a little bit of a disadvantage? And do people ever use that against you?
Oh, all the time, especially on draft day. And one of the rules that we kind of have with CBS is you have to be honest all the time. Anytime you get information, you've got to put it on the site in some form or fashion. Anytime you've got a feeling about a guy, you can't hide it. You know, every year I try and come up with a player who you can take with a late pick who's going to play better than that pick is. And last year was Jonnu Smith. And I didn't want to tell anybody about it. I wanted to keep Jonnu Smith for myself so that I would be the only one that would draft him in all my leagues. But I can't do that. I've got to, you know, spill my guts every time there's a microphone on. And I really touted him and said he's going to be good. And he ended up being pretty good. And it's one of those things where people, they know who I like. And this is in my personal draft. I'm in a keeper league with college buddies that we've been doing since the late 90s. And first of all, they can't believe that the job that I have is the job that I have.
Yeah.
And then they use my rankings against me. So I never get half the guys I really even like. But yeah, I still get by. I like a lot of players. I don't have to just sit on 8 players who I like or whatever. I'm I'm always okay if they take a player that I really like, but it happens every year where Dave likes Jonnu Smith or Dave likes Darren Waller. We better get him before Dave takes him in round nine. Sometimes they take him like three rounds earlier than they take him, and I just start laughing at him. Like, you knucklehead. I was not going to take Jonnu Smith in round five. He's all yours. Enjoy him. You know? So sometimes it works to my advantage that way, where people get too excited about a guy. Now, the other thing I'll tell you is that I also know how my colleagues are thinking. So this is a great little story. Everybody at CBS, we're all in the same dynasty league together. And Jamie, like as soon as Michael Carter was picked by the Jets, Jamie Eisenberg was a big fan of Michael Carter. And in our rookie only draft, I knew that I wanted to draft a good running back with my first round pick. I had won the league, humble brag, and traded up in the draft to get in front of Jamie to draft Michael Carter right in front of him. And just like the best thing that could ever happen when you take a player is for someone to say, oh, sniped. And Jamie didn't say that he was sniped, but he did say, well, my pick at 11 is up for grabs. If anybody wants to make a trade, let me know that I took the guy that he wanted. And I was happy because that's the guy I wanted too. I made the move to go up and get him. And I think Jamie took Terrace Marshall instead, which was a really good pick.
Yeah.
But it is just funny how that works out. So I also do the same thing with Jamie Eisenberg and Heath Cummings and Adam Azer and Chris Towers and everybody at CBS. I know who they like. And if there's a player that I also like, I will jump in front of them to get them. If I know that I'm not going to have a chance at them once I pick after them, you get
what I'm saying. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm excited to ask you a little bit later who those players are that you're excited about for the upcoming season. But right now I'm interested, who are those people that you're, let's get another humble brag in there. Who are those people that you're proud of over the years that you kind of feel like you were a little bit ahead of the game on in predicting their breakouts?
I'm proud of Jonnu Smith last year. I'm proud of Darren Waller the year before that. That's a great story where I actually noticed him blocking in a preseason game. Remember preseason games? Remember how we used to hate them and then we had a year without them?
Yeah.
And now we can't wait.
Please come back. Please come back.
Yeah, we're going to hate them again after the third week of preseason games. But for now, we can't wait to have them back. Please come back. But like, I remember hearing about Waller, and I had a friend who was on the Raiders, and he told me, yeah, this guy's going to be pretty good. And then I see him blocking in a game, and I go, well, if he's blocking Terrell Suggs in a preseason game and he's playing with the starters, then he's probably got a really good chance of being a full-time player for the then Oakland Raiders. And he was great. He really helped people out in their fantasy leagues. But my favorite one, you got to go all the way back to, I think it was 2012 or 2013. Alfred Morris was a sixth round pick of the Washington team. And everybody was kind of swinging from Roy Helu. They thought that Roy Helu was going to be the best running back in Washington. And through a friend of Mike Shanahan, I figured out that Alfred Morris was the best running back for that offense. And I went to the friend and I said, hey, can you find out if this is true? And within minutes, the friend wrote me back saying, just talk to Mike. Alf's going to be their guy. You tell anybody and you're dead meat. And especially don't tell Alfred because Alfred doesn't even know that.
Oh, wow.
So I was slowly and carefully on social media, and Twitter wasn't as huge back then as it is now, saying, hey, you know, there's this guy on Washington named Alfred Morris. He looks like he's a good fit for this offense. Take him with your last pick. And in the meantime, it's like money in the bank because I know that this guy's going to end up being, you know, big time player for Washington. And sure enough, like week one comes around and we're recommending Alfred Morris all over the place. And yeah, get this guy in your lineup. Forget about even just drafting him or finding him off the waiver wire. Put him right in your lineup. And he had a great game. I think it was against New Orleans. And he went on to have a pretty good career in Washington.
Yeah.
And that was a good one. So sometimes, and that was a combination of watching the players play, but also knowing people who could tell you. And the same thing happened with Waller. With Jonnu, I didn't have anybody from Tennessee tell me specifically that Jonnu was going to have a good year, but people close to the team told me, and that was good enough for me on top of what my own study said, which is this is a good athletic player on a team that needs athletes to catch the football. So I don't know who quite that guy is going to be this year, but the preseason being back will help me figure it out.
Yeah, that year, Alfred Morris ran for over 1,600 yards. So you definitely got the
skill. Not bad.
Yeah, 13 touchdowns, I believe.
And listen, there have been other players who I've touted who have absolutely stunk. Like there's one guy on Twitter who, whenever I tweet, he tweets back hashtag Tajay for Tajay Sharp, because I thought that Tajay Sharp was going to be a good player as a rookie and a late round pick, and he stunk. But there have been others like Kenny Golladay. Kenny Golladay had 2 touchdowns in his first NFL game. And I had talked up Kenny all summer long. And then he got hurt during his rookie year and he never was quite as good. But he's turned out to be a really good receiver. Yeah. So anybody that listened and did pick Golladay in their dynasty drafts, he didn't cost them a first round pick. They were probably happy. Michael Gallup was another one who I thought. And then with Gallup, I actually talked to the offensive coordinator for the Cowboys. And he talked up Gallup quite a bit. He ended up having a nice career. Don't know if he's actually ever going to be as good as he was 2 years ago, but that was another player that we touted. Tyler Eifert when he was a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Jay Gruden told me, yeah, he's going to be a big part of the offense. You're going to look really smart by saying that he's going to be, you know, a stud for fantasy, and then he wasn't. So there are misses too, but those hits, whenever my rule of thumb is, if you can hit on one player from round 7 or later in your draft, you're doing great.
Absolutely.
If I can help people do that, man, that gets me excited. That's what gets me pumped. That's why I watch the fourth quarter of preseason games, to find that diamond in the rough, to say, okay, go get this guy, late pick. Half your league doesn't even know who he is, and you're going to end up running away with this thing. And then if you miss, at least you're not at least I'm not saying, you know, go take this unknown player with your second round pick or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want people to do that. It's a late pick. If you mess up, no big deal. Yeah. Just a late round pick. And then it's also kind of communal. There's somebody from every league that's getting together on this bandwagon that I'm building, saying, go draft Jonnu Smith. And we all celebrate together when he has a good game in week 1 or whatever.
Yeah, that's awesome. So fantasy sports have changed so much over the years. I'm sure, like, when you started, you were probably getting a lot of this information from box scores and everything like that, and filling out the numbers and everything like that that way, and looking at newspapers to get some of this information. So it's changed so much over the years. And where do you see, like, the future of fantasy sports going?
That's a great question. I wonder if the future of fantasy sports is going to involve the players giving their own analysis, which could be dangerous because every player thinks they're going to be great.
Yeah.
Vernon Davis once told me, I'm going to get 1,000 yards rushing and receiving in the same season. How are you going to do that, Vern? I don't know if that's going to happen. Vern. But, you know, players have very, very lofty expectations for themselves. They're all very, very confident in themselves. You know, but I think that we could get to a point where the players start giving analysis in season.
Wow.
And, you know, a couple of players have podcasts, or they do, you know, live streams. I know that Austin Eckler has been on with you guys. I know that he does all kinds of media in season. Wouldn't surprise me one bit if Austin Eckler started talking about, yeah, I've got a game this week, and I think I'm going to get the ball a lot this week. I think I'm going to catch 10 passes this week. And not that anybody's sitting Austin Eckler, but maybe in DFS, they all rush to get him into their lineups for the 1 week matchup. And then he goes out and he gets 10 catches or something like that. I think that could be part of the future, where the players themselves take it upon themselves to talk themselves up. I don't think that they'll ever talk, opponents down. I just think that that's kind of an unwritten rule most of the time in the NFL, where when they're being recorded, that they're not going to say not nice things about other people in the league. But I think that that could be part of where it's going. And data, the data just keeps getting more and more interesting. What's the data point we had? I can't remember exactly what it was, but we've got an analyst on our sister site Sportsline named Jacob Gibbs, who came up with this awesome, or at least different, stat. I can't remember what it is. I can't believe I'm blanking on it right now.
All good.
But Jacob came up with an interesting stat that was new. It was fresh to us. Maybe it was, I think it was number of targets per routes run.
Oh, wow.
Now, when a receiver's on the field and it's going to be a pass, 99% of the time they're running a route, but they don't get targeted every single time. How often do they get targeted when they run a route? Some receivers, it could be as much as like 30% of the time. Well, that's pretty good. But it also, I mean, you can also kind of figure out that number to be a positive, just indicated by the number of targets that they get, period. So that that's another interesting stat, but there's stats that come out all the time that make people gravitate towards certain players. Air yards has been one of those stats over the last couple of years. Average depth of target was one that was invented almost 10 years ago by Pro Football Focus. And that one is, it gives context.
Yeah.
That's what all these stats do. And they help you make an argument for why a player should be in your lineup or be out of your lineup, be on your team or be on somebody else's team. And we're all trying to work to find those next new data points. In the case of this projected strength of schedule story that that's me coming up with my own data. It's not hard and fast data, obviously. I can't say that I guarantee that, you know, Washington's defense is going to be the best against quarterbacks this year or whatever they're ranked. But there's proprietary stuff as well that it helps people think and come to some conclusions for how they want to build their team and which players they want to get.
Dave, I'm really intrigued by the fact that you're kind of cultivating sources inside organizations. Can you talk about that? I mean, I'd imagine it's a lot harder to do that as a fantasy football guy than a beat writer who's got a press credential and who's in the building every day. And I know you've been around a while. So how have you kind of done that over time? Is it just a friend of a friend? You meet people at social outings and you connect to one person to another? Like, how does that work?
It's all the above. You know, there are lots of people who love football, who work in football, and they happen to play fantasy football, and they'll reach out sometimes. And it's not just them. There's a lot of beat writers who love to play fantasy football. And so we'll share information, all of the beat writers and I, and, you know, it's basically like a bartering system where the beat reporter for Team A gives me stuff and he says, okay, what have you heard from Team B or Team C? And I tell them what I've heard from Team B or Team C. And the other fun thing about it is that the stuff that I get from those teams, it's reflected in my rankings. I don't keep that stuff to myself. It's like I told you, I've got to be able to share everything and spill my guts. So when I get that information, I might not tweet, I've been told Logan Thomas is going to be an awesome part of the Washington offense this year, but I might move them up in my rankings three or four spots. And when you're in your draft and you're looking for someone to take late, oh, Dave's got Logan Thomas ranked 14th or something like that. Maybe I should spend a late pick on him. Mm. And he wasn't even the guy that I was signing. I wish I were, because he did better than Johnny Smith last year. But it's a combination of making contacts any way I can, using the contacts that I have, friends of friends for sure. Lots of former players who play fantasy football, or they've been involved in stuff that we've done at CBS that like to help out. So I like to use those guys. I still prefer to like come to conclusions on my own rather than be told things, but sometimes I come to the conclusion and then I want to double check them, and the double checking helps me make the right decisions on who to help people draft.
Hey, Tony, let's take a second to tell everybody about one of our favorite sponsors on the show.
Let's do it, man. 1740 Beard Balm. You can check them out at 1740beardbalm.com. Here's an example of one of their products, one of many of their products. They've also got some chapstick. They've got some beard soap. This is the actual Beard Balm, their signature product. If you guys have a big beard out there, definitely check them out. It's a great grooming tool. And we've also teamed up with them on a cool initiative where if you send to our Twitter or our Facebook or our Instagram a text that made you laugh, sports or otherwise, if we get good ones, we'll read them on the air. We'll send you some free Beard Balm and a gift card as well.
Yeah, check out 1740beardbalm.com. They also got chapstick. They got all kinds of, they got beard shampoo and stuff like that. And I know a lot of people that need chapstick, their lips come up, they come up talking to you with their lips looking like they got chalk on them and shit. You gotta put some chapstick on, man. That's gross. That looks nasty. There shouldn't be dust flying off your lips when you talk.
It looks like a construction site.
Yeah,
right?
What the hell's wrong with you, man? Come on. I just drove through a fucking dirt field or something when this motherfucker's talking.
Your
like
car's full of dust.
yeah, that's not necessary, man. So check out 1740beardbalm.com.
Another question I've always wanted to ask you, Dave, I'm a big sports betting guy. And so I'm curious, how much do you take into account the numbers that Las Vegas puts out there? So, for instance, if an over under for one game is really high, do you say, you know, that running back or wide receiver has a slightly more chance of getting a touchdown because the guys in Vegas are saying that? Or do you kind of not pay attention to that as much?
Well, I kind of think it's obvious information. And we know that the numbers in Vegas are based mostly on public perception. So when there's a game between two teams that score a lot of points, you know, like that Chiefs-Rams game in Mexico City way back when,
Yeah.
You knew that everybody was going to pound the over on that game. And it worked out just great for everybody who did. But I think it's obvious. I think maybe you can cross-check those numbers. And, you know, occasionally there's, you know, a game between the Jaguars and the Vikings. And, oh, crap, that over-under is 48. Why? You know, what's going on with that line? And so maybe when I see something like that, something that looks out of the ordinary, I'll look for reasons why it might be that way. And then I can implement that into my studying for that game for the week.
That's really
interesting. The thing that I find more often is there always seem to be two or three fishing lines that Vegas puts out
every week. Yep.
Yeah.
Where it's like a team that's 0-3 is suddenly a 2.5 point favorite over a team that's 2-1, something like that. And it makes me think, well, Vegas wants people to bet the 2-1 team because they're getting points and it's probably not going to work out very well for them. So I always like to kind of go against those teams and take the 0-3 in this example, the 0-3 team that's a favorite, and then find the players on the team that would make sense to benefit in fantasy.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I call those trap games, and you're right, man. It never fails. Every single week, there's one or two of those, and I don't have any numbers to back this up, but my gut tells me it seems like 75 or 80% of the time, those traps hit for Vegas and don't hit for the public. It really does seem that way.
They are very good at what they do, so it's pretty easy to take advantage.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Hey, man, getting into this upcoming season, who are those guys? This is what I think a lot of our listeners are curious. Who are those sleepers? Who are those under the radar guys that that you're high on this year that other people might not be so high on yet?
OK, well, first of all, it feels like there aren't many under the radar players because everybody is on top of news. Everybody's digesting news faster than they ever have before.
Good point.
So I'll name players who I like that I think you can get at a depressed value on draft day.
I like it. That's perfect.
Okay. So I'll start with quarterbacks, and I don't know how much longer this is going to last, but when we were doing our mock drafts, Ryan Tannehill was like an afterthought. No one was looking at Ryan Tannehill, and now that he's got Julio Jones, I think he's got to be pushed up quite a bit. He's a top 12 fantasy quarterback, but if you're getting him in round 8 or round 9, I think that's exceptional value. I think he's got a chance to be a top 5 type of fantasy quarterback, but I don't have to rank it that way. And I don't think anybody has to draft him that way. There are a lot of really good running quarterbacks and quarterbacks in general. And I think Tannehill is a little bit of both of those. And having Julio Jones to throw to, I think he's going to make him amazing. I love the idea of getting Tannehill, who, by the way, has a very, very favorable early schedule. Mm. Like, do not be surprised in the least if Tannehill, A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Derrick Henry all have huge starts to the season. You can go look at Tennessee's schedule later. It's amazing, but it does get harder. And when their schedule gets harder, the Rams' schedule gets easier. Ooh. The Rams' schedule is very tough to begin the year. They've got the Bears, the Colts, the Bucks. Those are tough defenses. I think they're going to make it a little bit hard on Stafford, who's just going to be getting acclimated to this new offense. Mm. But by week 4 on, I expect the Rams players to be outstanding. So one of the moves that I like making in a draft, if I can't get a quarterback at value that I really love and say like Dak Prescott in round 6 or something like that, I mean, we're talking about a really good value on one of those top quarterbacks. I'm going to get Stafford and Tannehill. And I think I'm going to have to get Tannehill first now just because he's going to be more popular than Stafford. And I might have to take them with back-to-back picks. Mm-hmm. And it might be like round 8, round 9, round 9, round 10, something like that. But those two guys are going to be my quarterbacks.
Nice. I'll
pair them throughout the year. If it comes to pass in San Francisco that Trey Lance ends up being the best quarterback or the starting quarterback, I should say, he would be the best quarterback if he's starting. Mm-hmm. He's got a chance to have outstanding numbers. He's an outrageous runner. He's got a big, strong arm. Accuracy and mechanics and footwork, like those are things that he needs to work on, but maybe he can get that in good enough shape to be the starter in San Francisco. But he would be excellent for fantasy if he's their starting quarterback to begin the season. Same thing with Justin Fields. I would not hesitate to take them on draft day and potentially even over Trevor Lawrence, who everybody's going to be excited about Lawrence. Someone's going to take Lawrence in every draft. And I think he'll be good. But if we know for sure that Trey Lance, especially Trey Lance, if he's the starter in San Francisco, I think he's got more upside to have a better rookie year than Trevor Lawrence. If we talk about running backs, Michael Carter, one of those guys. I know I already told you that I swiped him in front of Jamie in our dynasty draft, but I like him in seasonal drafts too. The Jets are going to use multiple running backs. He's their best one. He's good catching passes out of the backfield. He's okay running between the tackles. He's probably an absolute nightmare as a pass blocker, so he's not going to play every single snap.
Yeah.
But he could get a lot of work in this offense. And Zach Wilson is a move type of quarterback. So any of his teammates that can move along with him and get open in short distances, they're going to get the ball. Mm. And so I think that Carter's got a chance to do a lot of that. So he's one of my favorite running backs.
Nice.
That I can draft a little bit later on and start, begin the season with. He's probably going to begin the season on my bench. Not necessarily a starter for my team, but someone who I like to hang on to and see what happens. A couple of veterans that I think could get off to a good start this year. James Conner is one of them in Arizona.
Nice.
I think Raheem Mostert in San Francisco, another 49er here. I think both of those guys, while they're healthy, they're useful for fantasy. Conner profiles as a guy that can get a lot of touchdowns in Arizona. Might be a little too touchdown dependent to be a regular starter. But I like Edmonds better, for example, but I think Edmonds might max out at 4 or 5 touchdowns this year, whereas Conner could get 7 or 8 if he were to stay healthy. And the schedule isn't bad. I don't think it's that bad for them to begin there. They've got Indianapolis in week 1, I think. I think that could be a little tough. But I do like Mostert to begin the year. The 49ers schedule gets better as the year goes on. And as long as he's healthy, he's someone that I feel good about. And just one more running back, A.J. Dillon in Green Bay.
Mm.
Loved his style.
Yep. Yeah.
We know that the Packers lost Jamal Williams in free agency, so he's now the number 2 running back behind Aaron Jones. We've seen Aaron Jones miss games before. And this is a team that, especially if Aaron Rodgers isn't there, they're going to try running the ball a lot. And so they need 2 guys for that. And Dillon is an absolute beast. He could end up scoring like Connor, 7 or 8 touchdowns this year. So someone that you can draft late and just put on your bench. If you want to move to wide receivers next, and I'll just give you names here. I don't know if you want me to get into like the details on all these guys or not.
Dude, but this is awesome. Dude, inject this into my veins. This is awesome, man. Hook me up to an IV and inject this into my veins.
In Chicago.
Okay.
Inject Darnell Mooney onto your fantasy bench. I think he's going to have some big boom weeks.
Nice.
And so he's the type of receiver that you're not going to be sure exactly when you want to start him. But as number 3 receivers go, when they've got high upside, no matter who they play, you'll find ways to get them in your lineup. And I think Mooney can be one of those guys. Paris Campbell has been one of my muses for a long time. I've loved him since his days at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
And as the slot receiver for Indianapolis, as long as he stays healthy, I think he's got a shot at being a PPR dynamo, could have a floor of 12 PPR points per game, 6 catches per week. Get those easy throws from Carson Wentz and make plays after the catch. He can do a lot of that. Nice. Russell Gage is now obviously somebody that's going to be interesting in PPR format since he's the number 2 receiver for Atlanta, but he's basically going to be their 3rd guy, their slot guy, because Kyle Pitts is going to be their number 2.
Mm.
Gabriel Davis has been a real popular sleeper. He's the only big receiver in Buffalo. You know, the Bills have Diggs and Beasley and Emmanuel Sanders, and those guys are really good, but none of them have size to go with it. And then I talked about Terrace Marshall earlier. Same thing for him in Carolina as Davis in Buffalo. DJ Moore is a thick receiver, but he's not tall. Robbie Anderson's a tall receiver, but he's kind of thin.
Mm.
And Terrace Marshall is more like a power forward. He's a big guy. He's got some good speed. Wouldn't be a surprise if he had a red zone target every single week in Carolina.
Mm.
And they upgraded a quarterback, believe it or not. Sam Darnold is an upgrade. Last name, and this is a big time sleeper. This is a late pick that people in your league haven't heard about.
All right.
Marquez Callaway with New Orleans.
Wow.
Now, my favorite sleeper tight end is also on the Saints, Adam Trautman. I don't mind getting both of these guys and hoping one of them pops off, but we know that Michael Thomas is going to be the star of that passing game. We don't know how great that passing game is going to be because Drew Brees isn't there anymore. We don't know which quarterback it'll be, but assuming that they actually do try throwing more with Taysom Hill if he gets the job, Callaway and Trautman, I think, have a good chance of being the second best target getter on New Orleans. And it's not to slight Traquan Smith, but Traquan Smith has had opportunities in the past and he seems to be good for like one game and then he's terrible the next. Yeah. So I'm not really as excited about him as I am waiting till the very end of my draft to get somebody like Trautman or Callaway or both.
Mm. You mentioned Taysom Hill. What the heck do you do with a guy like that if you draft before it's announced how they're going to split time or who the starter is? I mean, where do you place him?
You play some late, so that way if he ends up not being the starter for New Orleans, then you cut him. Or if you're in a super flex league or a 2 quarterback league, you just either put him on the bench or you use him if you're in a pinch. But they've given him a lot of opportunities over the past couple of years, and it would seem a little it, wouldn't it seem a little strange for them to not give him more of an opportunity and to instead go with Jameis Winston, who they haven't had as much time with? And even if they do go with Jameis, I can't help but think that Taysom Hill will probably play more than he did with Drew Brees, where he's going to take more work away from Winston than he did from Brees. It could be a mess, but I actually think that things could be more interesting for New Orleans offense as a whole if it's Hill. It wouldn't be as good for fantasy. I think everybody in fantasy is rooting for Taysom Hill to win the Powerball and retire so that Jameis Winston would be the quarterback. Yeah. But from the Saints' perspective, unless Jameis like develops accuracy that he's never had before, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Taysom Hill as the starter there. And so I'm kind of at the point where I'd rather spend the pick on him than on Jameis. A late pick, I'm saying, in like a super flex. We're talking like round 8-ish.
Yeah.
When you start thinking about, oh, I need a quarterback who's going to do something, and you know, I can start two of them. Taysom will probably be my first one there instead of Jameis.
Let's stick with Jameis for a second, because I know you're a guy that watches tape. You said if he can kind of develop accuracy that he hasn't had, he did look good in limited time last year, right? So is that more smoke and mirrors and just kind of, or do you think that was a sign of improvement?
I don't think he improved. I don't think he was very good last year. When he came in the second half of the game that Drew Brees got hurt in, he was missing guys. Mm. He was not on target like an NFL quarterback should be. Mm. So I'm hesitant to trust Jameis Winston until I read about it from reports. I see it in preseason games, and maybe I hear about it from someone who I know in New Orleans, for example. And if that all comes to pass, where Jameis is good, he had LASIK surgery, he's accurate, he knows that this is his last chance, and he's on target, okay, then I'll probably buy back in. But at the same time, I know I would be so stunned if Jameis is the quarterback in New Orleans and he never has to leave the field because of Taysom Hill, like Drew Brees had to leave the field because of Taysom Hill. Like, I just don't see that happening. And that kills the upside for Jameis. Like, what happens when they're inside the 5-yard line? Is it going to be Jameis with a chance to throw a touchdown pass? Or is it going to be Taysom Hill in there who runs it in and takes away fantasy points from everybody? And everybody curses at their screen saying, where's my, you know, Alvin Kamara touchdown? This is BS.
I
think Taysom Hill is going to be involved, and I think he could be involved in a big way. The only way it won't be is if Jameis Winston plays and throws like he never has before, where he's not turning the ball over. His accuracy is pinpoint. That's an important part of that offense. And accurate football is very important for Michael Thomas to go and have an 80% catch rate. That goes without saying. And if Jameis can't do that, I don't see him getting a lot of opportunities in that offense.
Yeah, and unless your name is Josh Allen, it's not too often that we see guys actually improve their accuracy. Yeah, that's a tough thing to improve on.
It's really true.
Yeah.
And that was so outstanding. Like I did not see it coming. And that's like one of the things I think we would have seen if there were preseason games last year. Mm. Josh Allen would have played a little bit in the preseason, and we would have seen, okay, he's actually on target. He looks good. He's connecting with Stephon Diggs. That would have really upped his fantasy stock, but we didn't see that. There weren't any preseason games last year.
Yeah.
So kind of hidden away, and it worked to Buffalo's advantage. And then Buffalo just basically said, screw it. We're not going to run the ball this year. We're just going to let Josh Allen take the entire offense on his shoulders.
Yeah,
and he was great. And he had moments where he wasn't accurate, but he was way more accurate last year than he was in the prior seasons. And I think we're all expecting that to continue. His footwork got better. His delivery was better. And then having a receiver like Stephon Diggs. When we've seen quarterbacks break out, I did a study on this offseason as well. There are three things that help a quarterback break out and get to that next level statistically. Mm. One is either getting a new receiver or having a receiver step into a bigger role and playing well through it, usually because of the quarterback. But he got Stephon Diggs. That was a huge help. Seeing a lower pressure rate from his offensive line. His offensive line protected him better. And then accuracy on intermediate throws, passes between 10 and 20 yards. Though that accuracy, if that goes up, the player is going to break out, because every quarterback can throw it short, 0 to 9 yards. If you're in the NFL, you better be able to throw an accurate pass 9 yards or closer from the line of scrimmage. And when it comes to the deep ball, some quarterbacks can't do it, some can, but really that's something that it's tough to like rely on. It's that intermediate passing that you really need to see step up. It's one of the reasons why I think Jalen Hurts, for example, has a real chance to step up. He wasn't the most accurate thrower last year either, but he's getting Devontae Smith, who's a great route runner. He's got good hands. He's got good height with him. He's got a good catch radius, and he can run those intermediate routes and be on the other end of those throws from Jalen Hurts. and that would help him break out. And that offensive line is healthier in Philadelphia. So all those points I just talked about, all in Jalen Hurts' favor, who's already a dual threat quarterback because of his rushing prowess. He could end up being a very good fantasy quarterback this season.
And Dave, thanks for reminding me that Jameis Winston wasn't good last year, because in my, they were winning games. So in my mind, he must have been playing well, but you had the detail there that he at quarterback was not necessarily playing well, even though they were winning games. So I appreciate that for sure.
No problem. I'm just here to help.
So we talked about some of the guys that you think are going to perform well this year. Can you give us three guys that you think might disappoint, that people might have a little higher on their board than you do?
Oh, I'm not drafting Josh Jacobs unless it's like round five. He's had the offseason from hell. He's seen his offensive line get reshaped. 3/5 of that offensive line has changed, and maybe has gotten a lot worse from where it was last year. The Raiders used to have a really good offensive line, and now it's a big question mark. The Raiders brought in Kenyon Drake. They gave him a lot of money. They like his receiving ability. They've never given Jacobs a lot of catch attempts. He's averaged like 2.5 targets per game over his career. That's terrible. And Drake was better in goal to go carries than Jacobs was last year. And maybe some of that was a byproduct of playing next to Kyler Murray, who was a rushing threat himself, but he got the job done. He scored a lot of touchdowns from short yardage. And I'm wondering if the Raiders are looking for that. They're looking for a physical 1B type of running back and a back who can catch the ball out of the backfield. And those are all things that Jacobs maybe hasn't given enough of himself to in the coaching staff's eyes. And then their schedule is a nightmare on top of it all. They've got some really tough opponents. They begin the year with the Ravens and the Steelers in weeks 1 and 2.
Oh, wow.
Not good. Yeah. So Jacobs is not going to pay dividends for fantasy managers right away. There are people that are going to take him because he's a lead back on a good offense. Well, I don't know how good this offense is going to be, and I don't know how good this running back is going to be. So he's somebody who I'm kind of staying away from. I'm nervous about him. There tends to be a trend in fantasy where people go after the quarterback that was the breakout star the year prior. So like when Patrick Mahomes had his big year, people were drafting Mahomes in the first round. When Lamar Jackson had his breakout that same season, the very next year, and it was last year, people were taking Lamar Jackson very early. And now this past season, it was Aaron Rodgers that broke out. And I don't even know if he's going to play. So if he doesn't play this year, then obviously no one's going to draft him. But if he's still in Green Bay, I don't see how he keeps this up and how he keeps, you know, playing like a madman like he did last year. The years prior to last year, he was very average. He was an okay fantasy quarterback, but he wasn't top three or anything close to it. So he's somebody that I'm probably not going to draft a lot of this year. I'm not going to draft Odell Beckham. I think a lot of people are not going to draft Odell Beckham, but I mean, the guy hasn't been good since 2016. And Baker Mayfield played better without him. And my guess is that if he's healthy and playing in Cleveland, they're going to say to him, look, man, we're not going to give you the targets that you're going to want. You're just going to have to take on this role. You're still the number one outside receiver for the Browns, but Cleveland has clearly got a great offensive line and a great run game. And they got to keep Baker happy and comfortable. So they've got to mold that offense to be Baker centric and not to placate Odell like they might've done before. So Beckham's another player who I'm probably not going to see a lot of on draft day. Kenny Golladay is another one who makes me nervous. Anybody that's got a Houston Texans logo on their helmet.
Anybody.
That team looks like it's about to be an absolute like sinkhole for fantasy production. There are people that are going to love drafting Brandon Cooks because the Texans are going to be playing from behind. Well, who the hell's throwing him the football? How good is he going to be there? I mean, he was always a 50-50 shot to be good for fantasy from week to week when he had great quarterbacks throwing him the football. Now it's going to be Tyrod Taylor or Davis Mills. He's going to be good 20% of the time. I'm not going to want to deal with making a decision on him. So the other one, the very last one that I'm a little nervous about saying is everybody in the Bengals passing game. And I love Joe Burrow, but their schedule is tough. And I'm a little worried that Burrow might spread the ball around a little too much so that every week, maybe like I think Tyler Boyd might actually be the best receiver in PPR from the whole group, just because he'll be consistent. He's got this slot role. He's really good at it. He's a veteran. He and Joe Burrow were connecting a lot last year. I think 6 of 10 games together, Boyd had at least 15 PPR points every single in 6 of 10, like I said. And that was when he was throwing deep to AJ Green, and AJ Green was doing nothing with it as well. But Chase is a rookie. We'll see how quickly he adapts. T. Higgins is now going to be the number 2 receiver there. I feel like every week there will be like one, maybe 2 receivers in Cincinnati that have good fantasy weeks, and you're not going to know which one it's going to be from week to week. And I'm not sure that Burrow will be so productive and hyper productive that he'll be able to deliver for fantasy managers every single week, especially because that offensive line, I just don't think it's going to be as improved as it could be in Cincinnati.
Dave, as people are preparing for their drafts, how is this season unique to other seasons in terms of depth at certain positions, or maybe shallowness at certain positions compared to others?
It's deep everywhere except tight end. I think we're really deep at running back this year. It's the first time in a while that it's been this deep, but I think fantasy managers are going to react to that by drafting a lot of running backs early. And I've heard people make the case for, well, you should go the other way and just draft a lot of tight ends and wide receivers early. But the running backs that are going to be left on the draft board by the time you get to round five, it's going to make you puke in your shoe. You're not going to want to draft Melvin Gordon,
yeah,
or, you know, guys like that. You know, Miles Gaskin, who might be okay. Mike Davis might be okay. But I mean, I wouldn't pass up the chance of getting some of these unbelievable running backs, from Cam Akers to Antonio Gibson to Najee Harris, who I'm really starting to buy into as a first round pick.
Nice.
I wouldn't pass up on those guys when everybody else in your league is doing the exact same thing. They're not going to pass up on them. So it's almost like you've got to get your piece of the pie before, or while the rest of your league is getting theirs too. And it just so happens that wide receiver is, my God, like it's super deep. Like I'm easily able to put Kenny Galladay outside of my top 24 because there are so many other receivers who you can make the case for having a top 24 type of a season. So receiver is going to be deep. You can, when you get to round five, if you need a receiver, you're going to be in good shape. If you need a tight end, you might be in okay shape. If you need a quarterback, you'll be in good shape. And if you need a running back, you're going to want to kill yourself because it's not going to be pretty at all. Yeah. Quarterback has always been deep. I would say there's probably around 16 quarterbacks that I would say are good enough to start this year. So my plan in my fantasy drafts as of now is I'm going to spend my first three picks on running backs or maybe one of the stud tight ends if I feel like the value is fair.
Yeah.
Like if I'm last pick of round one and I've got those back-to-back picks and no one takes Travis Kelce, I'm going to take a running back in Travis Kelce. And I'm going to lock up that tight end position and have an advantage over the rest of my league there. But I also don't mind if I start my draft with three running backs and I've got that position triple covered and I can just go and hammer wide receivers and other positions as the draft unfolds. Because I really think there's not going to be a lot of exciting running backs to take once you get to round five. There'll be rookies. Like I mentioned Carter and Trey Sermon will be an interesting pick. He'll be popular because he's on the Niners. And I mentioned running backs that can get you off to a good start, like Mostert and James Conner. I think that as long as you load up on at least two running backs early on, you'll feel okay taking the rest of those guys.
And so we're going to let you go here in a second, brother. But I want to know, what is your philosophy when it comes? Obviously, it depends on what type of league you're in and everything like that. But what are some of the pillars that you look for when you're getting ready to go into your draft for one of your leagues?
Well, I got to make sure I've got a six pack ice cold.
There you go. Right next a to me, couple right of, what you mean? Just gotta one. Sure. I mean, two of them bitches.
Well, yeah, I'm all lightweight. I got to make sure that there's good Wi-Fi in the draft.
Yeah,
room.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Good call.
I always want to know really simple stuff. Like what's the scoring system in this league? Is it a PPR league? How many points for a passing touchdown? Are there any other quirks that I need to know about? Any other bonuses that might affect how I go about putting my team together in this league? Everybody should want to do that. And then the thing that I just talked about, knowing which positions are deep, which positions are thin, knowing where my breaking points are at each position. Like I told you, there's like 16 quarterbacks I'd feel good starting week one right away as my starter. Mm-hmm. There's probably only 19 running backs I feel really okay with as a starting RB1 or 2 for my team. So I'm going to try and get as many of those guys as I possibly can. Before I'm stuck picking from guys that might be benched by week three and a waste of a pick. And I know that receivers deep. And my overall philosophy on receiver is that I can go to the waiver wire and find somebody who's got a chance to give you 15 PPR points every single week. There's going to be somebody.
Yeah.
So I don't like investing too much into wide receiver. And then tight end, when I'm looking for a tight end, I want a tight end. If it's not a stud like Kelce or Waller or Kittle, or what Hockenson, Mark Andrews, and Kyle Pitts could be. I just want a tight end that has a chance to score every week or maybe get you 70 total yards, like a four catch, 70 yard stat line.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for at tight end. That's a pillar there.
Yeah.
I like it. And Dave, you said that you're ready to have your six pack with you on draft day. I hope you like the hard stuff too, because we're actually going to send you a bottle of Still Austin whiskey. This is one of our sponsors. They're really good to us.
Oh, awesome.
And so I'm going to reach out to you after this, ask you for your mailing address. And that's why, so that we can send you a bottle of this, just to thank you so much for coming on the show.
And so we know where to go. Dude, if amazing. We know where what house to show up to in case our fantasy league blows up. And we have you to blame. I'm gonna be the guy outside the bushes.
It'll make it a little bit easier for me to take.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. This was awesome, Dave. We really appreciate you coming on, man. This was like so much fun to get to talk to you and pick your brain and everything. We had a lot of fun, and I hope you did as well. Anything else, Tony?
I did want to ask you real quick before we let you go, Dave, thoughts on Austin Eckler's upcoming season. Like the Chargers have improved their offensive line a little bit. What's your outlook on him, a friend of the show?
It's a huge help that his offensive line got upgraded. And I also like the direction of the offense now that they've changed coaches. Let me just open up my running back notes on Eckler. He missed six games last year. He still averaged over 15 PPR points per game. That's always a really good thing. He averaged 5.4 catches per game. I think that has a chance to go up. We've seen it before. I mean, obviously, the way that they've used Austin Eckler in LA in the past has been as a pass catcher out of the backfield. I think that's going to continue. I think the coaching staff that's in place now wants to utilize Eckler to his strengths, but they're going to find another running back to go with him. So the one issue that I've got with Austin Eckler is just how many carries is he going to get inside the 3 yard line? He's been replaced in those spots before. Usually it was because Melvin Gordon was there, and Melvin was a good back in short yardage situations. This year, who are the guys on the Chargers depth chart that could replace Eckler there? There's Justin Jackson. There's Larry Roundtree, who's a rookie. He's kind of interesting. Joshua Kelly, last year's rookie. I'm curious to see how that plays out in training camp in the preseason, because I do think that is the one area where Eckler loses a little bit of value, and that sinks him a little bit in non-PPR leagues. But in those leagues where catches count, and you know that Austin's going to get a bunch of them, absolutely, I think that having the offensive line protect both him and Justin Herbert, who's throwing in the passes, is a positive. And I can't see a way where he doesn't have an outlet for 100 total yards every single week.
Awesome. You're putting the vulture warning out there for Austin Eckler potentially.
And we've seen it before. Let me see if I've got it in my notes. How many times he's had a short yardage goal line. 2020, he was 11 of 16 converting downs of 3 yards or fewer anywhere on the field. So we're talking about like third and two from the 35-yard line. Yeah, Austin can convert those. He only got one goal line try all of 2020.
That's crazy, considering how well he is.
He was two for six on goal line tries in 2019, and he had a fumble on one of the ones where he didn't score.
Awesome.
This is an area that he needs to work on a little bit, and it also might be an area where the Chargers don't want him to work on it. They'd rather just go with somebody who's a little more physical.
That makes sense. Yeah. Hey, thank you so much for the insight. Yeah, this was awesome.
So you can check him out. Go to cbssports.com/fantasy/football. To check out some of the information he has on there. You can also give him a follow on Twitter. It's at Dave Richard on Twitter. Give him a follow because he's got some awesome information on there. I was combing through it last night and the night before, and it's awesome. You know, if you're going to get in some fantasy leagues, you got to go check out Dave and see what he's got to say, man.
Yeah, let Dave do the work for you. Yeah, he's doing a lot of the heavy lifting, so you can benefit from all
this crazy information that he has, man. You'd be stupid not to go over there and check it out and use that as another bullet in your chamber for your fantasy league.
Absolutely. And do you prefer the drichard@cbs.com or Twitter for people to reach out and ask questions?
Twitter is better than email, but if people need to email me, drichard@cbs.com works.
Awesome.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for coming on the DMPCD Sports Podcast. We really appreciate it, brother. We'd love to pick your brain sometime later in the season when there's some games going on and everything like that.
Sure. Count on it. We'll have fun.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, man. Appreciate it, brother.
You got it.
That was an awesome interview with Dave Richard of CBS Sports. So much information in there, man. He gave us a lot of proprietary information that a lot of people probably aren't privy to yet. And there's no way you can't come away from this with a little bit more information about what to do with your fantasy league, who to pick. He told you about, he slaves over this information constantly, man. He knows a lot of stuff. And so check him out. Check him out on Twitter. Get some insider information, man, so you can win your fantasy league this year. Talk a bunch of shit to your friends. You know?
Yeah, man. That's one of the biggest takeaways for me is I didn't realize that he has those sources that he cultivates inside these organizations. And then he sprinkles that knowledge and information into his rankings and into his predictions and into his suggestions. Yeah. That was really cool to hear him talk about that.
Yeah, it really was, man. And talk about the running backs, how it's a light year for running backs. He said there's only 19 that he would really consider taking. That's interesting as hell to me too, because it is, you know, saying like you definitely got to think about that. I hope Nick Chubb's on that list. I'm sure he is. Nick Chubb's up there. I think hopefully he'll have another good year this year. I think the Browns have done right with having Kareem Hunt, allowing him to spell Chubb from time to time. So it's going to be a great year, man. This is going to be a very interesting fantasy league fantasy year, because there's going to be some guys going to make some jumps. You know what I'm saying? You got Julio Jones, who's a very enigmatic player right now. A lot of people are talking about him. What kind of year is he going to have in Tennessee?
A lot of quarterbacks in new places,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah. And I was surprised to hear him say that he was super high on Tannehill, too. That's a guy that I haven't normally been too high on. But
yeah, it's different in fantasy, though.
Because,
you know what I mean? You can have your opinion on a quarterback in the NFL. It's like the Jameis Winston thing we talked about. It's like they were winning games, but was he really looking good?
Yeah.
Tannehill, you know, is he putting up the numbers? And he does that in fantasy really well, for sure.
That was a great interview, man. So I encourage everyone to check out Dave on Twitter and on CBSSports.com/fantasy/football. And let's tell everybody about Oddshark, Tony.
Yeah, before we let you guys go, just wanted to remind you that Oddshark is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. So if you're looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game, Oddshark has that too. And best of all, folks, it's absolutely free. They have in-depth expert analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks. So whether you want to check out tonight's football odds, this week's hockey or basketball trends, or anything in between, head over to Oddshark and get some of those future lines as well. You can get some MVP stuff that we talked about as well. And you can head on over to Oddshark and start thinking like a shark today.
Yeah, and that's Oddshark.com. It's right here, man. Why am I even saying that? It's just
there we go.
Yeah, just go there. If you can read, motherfucker.
You feel like a weatherman right now?
Yeah. It's a lot harder than it looks, motherfucker. I'll tell you that right now.
But, that's why I'm not trying it.
Yeah. Check us out on all social media platforms. That's going to be on your screen right about now. Send us a follow. Give us a review on wherever you listen to this podcast. We greatly appreciate it. It helps the show out tremendously.
Thumbs up on YouTube. Yeah. All that.
Tell your friends about it. I had a couple people hit me up this week and said they've been telling their buddies about it, and everyone loves the show. So we're doing really good, man. We're doing good on the charts as well.
Awesome
guest.
Looking
good on the charts and everything. So we want to thank everyone for listening. Please tell your friends about the show. We'll be back next week with another awesome guest. And until then, we'll see you guys next week. For Tony, I'm Chad. Peace out.
Thanks for listening. You can find more episodes and all other Hot Pie Media originals baked fresh daily at our home on the web at hotpiemedia.com, the Hot Pie Media YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.